Begin the current daf mesef. It's in the Darim daf lamed. Begin on the bottom of daf chav tesem beis, three lines up in the bottom of the amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous two daf and from our previous Mishnah. The Mishnah said in the seifa of its halacha that if someone said that this tree, this sapling, this netiya should be kaddish, it should be sanctified, it should be like a carbon until it's niktzatz, until it's chopped down, so then the Mishnah said these enigmatic words that ain lehem pidyon, that they don't have pidyon. So this machlikis bar pada and ula, what does that mean? I mean, everyone agrees that it has kedusha. Question is, what does it mean in lehem pidyon? Ula says, meaning that it doesn't have pidyon after it gets chopped down, because he holds kedusha is paka bichti, meaning since you gave a limited time frame how long it should be kaddish for, therefore once it gets chopped down, it gets immediately removed on its own from its kedusha, and you don't have to redeem it. And bar pada had a different interpretation. He said that actually, and this is based on his opinion, that Kedusha is not Pakabichti, can't just be removed. You have to do an action, a pidyon, a get, something to remove that Kedusha. So therefore he interprets inlem pidyon meaning, up until the ketzitz, up until it's chopped down, you can't redeem it. What does that mean? Of course you could redeem it, but it then gets automatically reactivated in its Kedusha. Because that's what the person meant to say when he said, until it's katzatz, I want it to be kaddish. What that it's like he said that even I'm making it kaddish now, but even when I'm going to redeem it, I'm going to pay it. I want it to then be like as if now I said that then it should be reactivated and become kaddish again. Because he's saying I want it to be kaddish until it's katzatz. So even if let's say that takes 10 years till it gets chopped down, 2 years later if you redeem it, you're saying I still want it to be kaddish. So it's like you're reactivating now. It's like you're saying I want it to be kaddish now, and that when I redeem it, it'll be reactivated. And that's what it says, inlem pidyon. Pidyon is not going to help until it's chopped down. And then you have one more pidyon you need to have, again, because he holds that kedusha is not paka bichti. Now, based on this interpretation, the Gemara says that Yosef Reb Oven v'Reb Yitzchak, and these two Amorim were sitting, Reb Yitzchak b'Rebbe, Kamed Reb Yirmiyah, they were sitting in front of Reb Yirmiyah. Now, but Kamenam Nem Reb Yirmiyah was dozing off. So Yosef Reb Kamri, so these two Amorim, that is Reb Oven and Yitzchak b'Rebbe, was sitting and saying the following halacha. They said, Lebar Pada di Omar, as we just explained according to Bar Pada, this interpretation of our Mishnah, who said when the person says, I want this Elon, this Netiyah to be Kaddish, to be sanctified, up until it gets chopped down, he interpreted, what does the Mishnah mean? In Lam Pidyon, it means, Pidon Chayzim Ekoichayz, that even when you redeem it, it then gets reactivated and becomes sanctified back again. That's like as if what it's, he said, and therefore that's actually what ends up happening. He gets reactivated again, even when you redeem it. So on that, we continue on the top of Lamed Amar Aleph. So they said, based on his halacha, Tifshit Deboi Rav Hoshea, we could resolve the question that Rav Hoshea posed. Rav Hoshea posed the following question. He said, Hanesin Shtei Prutos Leisha. Someone gives two prutos to a woman, meaning the minimum amount necessary to engage a woman, to get engaged to her, for marriage, is with a pruta. So he gave her two coins. Vamalani said to Halok, Ba'achas hiskachli hayom. With one of the prutas, I want you to be engaged to me today. Uba'achas hiskachli la'achas shagarshich. And with the other one, I want you to be engaged to me after I divorced you. Meaning, let's say the person thought maybe this is going to happen. One day he's going to get upset, he's going to get divorced. But now I love you so much. So he's saying that I want it to be that the second coin I'm giving you now should then be the kedushin after I divorce you. So on that, the question was, is that possible? Can he do that? Can he engage her now with the second coin for when he divorces her, that then it should be reactivating the kedushin again? So on that they said, based on Bar Pada's halacha, hachanami davi kedushin, you would say that yes, the second pruta would go ahead and create a kedushin for after the gerushin. In other words, because just like we say in our Mishnah, where he could sanctify these netiyos for after it's going to be redeemed, and the Kedusha is Chal, where although that he's not going and re-sanctifying it after he redeems it, we said that actually by itself it gets reactivated, because he said, Achei Katzitz, which is as if he said that I want to be Kaddish now, and after it's redeemed, to continuously be reactivated. So therefore, definitely when you say that straight out, that you want it to be reactivated afterwards, that it's going to be reactivated. So therefore, they reason that the same thing would apply over here. When he's getting engaged to her and he tells her that I want the second coin to work for you after I divorce you, so that even after the divorce, even if he doesn't go ahead and re-engage her, he's automatically re-engaged because he did that now. So we see from about this halach of our Mishnah that that does work, that although you're engaged now, and you're not divorced yet even, but you could already give her a kedushin that will automatically take place after the gerushin, we see that that works from the halacha of Barpada in the Mishnah, which is the same thing, where although you're sanctifying it now, and it's not redeemed yet to re-sanctify it, but you could do that now already to sanctify that it should take place after the redemption by itself to reactivate the kedushin. So that's what they reason. Now, Iter Behu Rabbi Yirmiyahu. Rabbi Yirmiyahu woke up from his dozing off. And Amalu, he said to them, wait a second. Maiko Mademisun Padon Hu. How are you comparing when the person himself who's redeeming it, which is the case in our Mishnah of the Netiyos, lepadam acherim, to when other people, which is what he's comparing to the halacha of the Isha, of engagement, to when other people are redeeming. As he explains, says, Rechnin actually says that they're different. He says, Padon Hu, when the person himself, who is creating the Kedusha, and he's the same person that redeems it, so then, like Barpada said, Chayzer's the Kedusha, then it gets reactivated back again, it's Kedusha. Now the reason being is because since this person who made the Kedusha, who he also made the condition, I always wanted to be Kaddish, these saplings, up until it gets chopped down. Now, since he's the one that in the interim goes ahead and redeems it, therefore, these Natiyas never left the domain of the two main players of what happens with Hekdash. There's an owner, and there's the party that he wants it to go to, which is Hekdash. So it never left either one of their domains when he's paid it. So it makes sense that since that was his condition, he was the one that was Makdash it. And he said that when it's going to be redeemed, I want it to go back to Hekdash. So that's still the same parties that are involved. That's him being Makdashit, going to Hekdash, and then he redeems it from Hekdash. So then, yes, he had said he wants it to be reactivated, so it goes back to Hekdash again. So that's the halacha of Barpada in our Mishnah. However, Pedom Acherim, when other people redeem it, in other words, let's say we took the halacha of our Mishnah, where he said that he wants it to be Kaddish until it gets chopped down. If let's say it's not him that redeems it, then even if it ultimately finds its way back to his domain, Rabbi Yechanan explained that Ein Chayzus V'Kedushas, actually the halacha would not be that it gets re-sanctified again, even though this person had said he wanted to be Kaddish until it gets chopped down. The reason being is because from the moment that somebody else steps in and redeems it, so then the domain, the rights, the ownership of the first owner has been removed. Because from that moment on, there's no sanctity that it could apply to, let's say, these Natiyas, because it's not anymore that person's. Although he made that condition, he wants to be Kaddish, so it's Kaddish. Now, anyone could come along and redeem it and take it for themselves. They never made any conditions regarding it, and they have full rights to do whatever they want with it. It's only regarding the original owner that he said, when I'm going to redeem it, and then it's going to go right back, because I want always to be Kaddish until it's chopped off. And therefore, from that point on, even if it finds its way back to that person's domain, it's not going to take effect. So therefore, this is what Rabbi Yirmiyahu told to them, since there is a difference between when he redeems the thing that he was makdish, that he wants it to be reactivated and become hektish again. Yes, that's when Barpada is explained the halacha of our Mishnah that's going to get reactivated. But v'isha kipedo acherim damya. But a woman, in regards to marriage, if she gets divorced, it's actually similar to what someone else is redeeming. The reason being is because from the moment when the woman gets divorced, she gets removed from her husband's domain. And therefore, the Kedushin cannot go ahead and be reactivated again when you're dealing just with the two parties, which is Hektish and the owner, and he redeems it. And he himself, who's redeeming it, had said that I want it, me the redeemer, who's also the one who's Makdish, I want it to always be Kaddish until it gets chopped off. So yes, so automatically gets reactivated. In contrast to when someone else redeems it, he never made those conditions, he redeems it, even if it finds its way back to that person, but it's a new Kedusha. That can't just be reactivated. And therefore, that's the same thing that applies to marriage, where the woman, when she gets divorced, is already removed from the husband's domain. Since she's removed from the husband's domain, now, although he was made the condition, almost like the same thing as Barpada seemingly, where I want you to be engaged, and even when I divorce, I want to be re-engaged, well, that can't work, because it has left, it has entered a different party, and since it's by that other party, and therefore it removes itself from him, and he would have to go ahead and make a new kedushin. It cannot be the same old kedushin that he had done before they got divorced to work for it now. Now, actually, the Ran wonders that actually, to the contrary, it seems that the case of the woman getting engaged in divorce and getting re-engaged actually sounds like the case of Bar Pada, where it is the person himself redeeming. And the reason being is because, just like by the case of the Netiyos, since it never left the domain of Hektish, or from the domain of its owner who was Makdish in the first place, therefore he could be Makdish it already now for after when he's going to redeem it. So the Ran asked that, so to the woman, that since she's also an active player over here, it's no different than when you have Hektish and the owner, where it's still within that framework of the understanding of the contractual understanding they have between them, that even when he redeems it, he wants it to go back. So why is it any different with the husband and the woman, where those were two players also involved in this contractual understanding? And therefore, the same thing should be over here. Never left neither here his domain or her domain. Because now when she's getting divorced, she's like, it's like Hektish and him, which is her and him too. So therefore, it should be within the framework of Pleidehu that the Kedushin should work now for post the Gerushin. So on that, the Ran explains that that's not the conceptualization of how a marriage between a man and a woman works. And that is, he says, if it would be possible that a woman can marry herself off to a man, then you're right. That would be seemingly the same thing as someone who's Makdish the Netiyos, because she would then be an active player, just like the owner of the Netiyah, of the plantation, is to Hektish. However, the Torah says, Kiyikach ish ish. It says when a man will take a woman. It doesn't say ki silakach ish ala ish, that when a woman will be taken by a man, meaning that she's an active player. She's a passive player. Meaning it's not within the framework of a woman to bring herself to the husband's domain. Now, rather what happens is that when she agrees to be engaged, of course we need her consent. It's when she agrees to be mekudesh to the man, she's nullifying her das, and her desire and her will. And essentially what she does is that she makes herself like not an owner, which she is of her own self, and then the husband, he's the only one doing the active role of then taking her into his domain. Now, therefore, by Kedushin, we don't qualify the woman as a player in the sense to say that it's Poiduhu, that the ones that were always involved are doing it. Rather, the only one we consider is the husband. And therefore, since in the context regarding the husband, when the woman leaves his domain through divorce, she's now in her own rishos, so it's like someone else redeeming this thing. What he had made Kaddish, which was his wife is not also the one who made it Kaddish. And therefore, when she's removing that through Gerish and then she's in her own rishos, it's still within that same framework. It's not. Because in regards to Kedushin, the only one that's a player is the husband. The woman is almost like Mavatla herself, and she's just taken in marriage by the man. And therefore, we have already been done with the original Kedushin. And therefore, after Gerushin, she leaves his Rishos, and there's no more anymore in the domain of anyone that was involved in that Kedusha, and that's why it's like Poida Acher. Now, however, the Ran does conclude, now that's why, as the Gemara is explaining, which Rabbi Yirmi was telling them, that you can't resolve from Kedushin regarding to say that it's going to take effect, the second Pruta now for later, from the case of Bar Padova Mishnah Padahu, because as we explained, it's not the same thing, because our Mishnah is by Padahu, and here as we just defined the framework of marriage is really like Pada Achirim, because the woman who's now going to her own Rishus, meaning she's like redeeming herself, going somewhere else, she's really like an other regards to Kedushin, because the only one that's who is the husband, because he's the one that does the whole Kedushin. Now, however, what the Ran does say is that, however, if she's like Pad Nacherim, then your Birmir should have answered their question that actually that it cannot take effect. So on that, the Ran explains that Rabbi Yirmi wasn't doing that either. It's because neither is it totally similar to Pada Acherim either. The reason being is because the woman does play somewhat of a role that she allows herself to be taken into the rishus of the husband, so therefore you could compare it a little bit like Padon Hu, meaning when it goes back when she herself goes back into her own domain, she has rights over herself now. She's not taken anymore by the husband. It is somewhat like Padan Hu, because she does play somewhat of a role making the Kedushin. And that's why Rabbi Yirmi was saying that you can't compare it to Barpada of Padan Hu, but neither can you compare it to be not like Barpada to Zay Padan Acherim, because it's not all the way like Padan Acherim either. The woman is somewhere in the middle, and there it's not clear. As the Gemara says, Itmanami, similarly we find the same division, like Rabbi Yechanan said, that Amr Ami Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Lo Yishanu El Shabadan Hu. We only learned this halacha of Barpada, which is that you can already make now that the reactivation of when the interruption happens will automatically be reactivated by itself, is only when the person who is makdashit, he's the one that redeems it. But when other people are redeeming, so that already interrupts that cycle that we have, almost like an electric current, that current was stopped because someone else was involved, and therefore you can't say that the woman will automatically be re-mukudeshes. But at the same time, as Aran explained, neither will it be automatically that she will not be re-mukudeshes, because on some level she is like Padan Hu, and therefore the question that Rav Hoshea posed is not resolved in the halacha of Barpada. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, which continues on a related vein of the halachas of our perek, of our bond, the Dharm, which we said that although a person is saying something, we have to understand what his real intent is. And therefore we said, for example, by Nidrezuzin and Shkog and Havoy and Oinsin, where although he said something, but obviously his intent was not that, therefore it's not considered as a neder. So in a related vein, when the person says something, the words themselves have to be taken in the context of obviously what the person is trying to say, and that will define for us what is Nedu's coming to say. As the Mishnah explains, and a few Mishnayos that follow this that also say the similar idea. Haneder miyard hayam. Someone takes a vow prohibiting pleasure from those who travel on the seas, so mutu b'yishvei hayabasha, so then he's still permitted from those that live on land. In other words, what that means to say is those that don't generally travel, they're not the seafarers, they're not those who travel on the seas. He's only prohibiting pleasure from the sailors, from those type of people, but not from people that are on land most of the time. But miyeshvei hayabasha, but if he prohibits himself to have pleasure from those that dwell on land, asa miyard hayam is actually going to be forbidden even from those that travel usually on the seas, even if they're actually on the sea right now. Doesn't make a difference. Why? Because even those that travel the sea are included in the category of those who dwell on land. And the reason being is, ultimately, at one point, they're going to come off their ship and come onto land, as Gemara will explain the reason, and therefore, the Yerde Hayabasha includes the Yerde Hayam. It's just Yerde Hayam, and it means only them, not the Yerde Hayabasha. Now, the Mishnah qualifies, Loi ke'elu shehochem akal yafoi. When we say the Yerde Hayam, we don't mean those who just take a small trip from Akko to Yafoi, which is not so far. We mean to say those who travel on a far distance and they're on the seas for a long time. And the Gemara will explain, as the Gemara will begin right now, which halacha we're referring to, because there's two halachas that we said, where what context is referring to in defining who we mean Yerde Hayam. As the Gemara explains, Rav Papa v'Rav Acha b'Rei Rav Ikra, they argue regarding this qualification of the end of the Mishnah defining what we mean by Yerde Hayam, what part of the Mishnah is it going on. One of them says it's actually defining the halacha, the first halacha of the Mishnah, which is going to be leniency. The other one says we define the halacha of the sefer, which is actually going to be a stringency, as the Gemara explains. The one that says it's defining the halacha of the Reisha, he's learning the Mishnah as follows. First halacha of the Mishnah was, if someone says I'm forbidden from pleasure from those who travel the seas, so he said, mutu b'yesh v'hayyabasha, so he's permitted in those that don't travel the seas, that generally live on land. Ha-b'yer d'hayyam asa, but obviously the inference of that is, but those who travel the seas, he is forbidden. Now, that is a leniency, what the Mishnah is qualifying at the end, but v'loy ke'elu, as we continue on to Amud Beis, not like those, ha-holchem ha-akal yafu, we didn't mean those who travel short distances on a small little boat. If, let's say, you live in Venice, you're going ma'akal yafu, those people are considered those who dwell on land. What did we mean to say that when you're making yourself forbidden from Yerde Hayam, it means those people that go on the high seas, they take these long voyages, it's those type of people that he made himself forbidden for pleasure, but not those who just make these short little trips, and therefore that comes out as a leniency. But the one who learns it as a qualification of the second case of the Mishnah, he learns as follows. The Mishnah then said, "Hanoidim yeshiva yabasha." Someone that, however, makes himself forbidden for those who dwell on land is asaba yerdayim, will also still be forbidden from those who travel the seas. Now, on that is what the Mishnah is qualifying, that v'loy be'elah ha'olchem ma'akal yafa b'vad. Don't think that when we said you're making yourself forbidden from those who live on land, it means only that those who are generally on land, even though they're on the boats a lot, but it's only because they go on short trips. That's what the Mishnah is saying, that no, it's not that. It's actually even more stringent. When a person is making himself prohibited from those who live on land, it means even those who travel on the seas for many, many days. And so why would that be? Why aren't they called the Yerd HaYam? They're not the Yishra Yabasha. The reason is, as we explained in the Mishnah, since ultimately at one point they're going to come on dry land, no one lives forever on the seas, so therefore everybody's included in Yishra HaYabasha, inhabitants of the land, even if you're on the sea a lot. And therefore, that's the Chiddush L'Chumra of this interpretation, that they're still going to be considered from the Yeshivi HaYabasha, even though they're Darka Lafarash. A similar type of a Mishnah, the Gemara continues, Hanoidir Miroye Hachama. Someone takes a neder prohibiting pleasure from those who see the sun. So Asar Af Besumen. Actually, that will make him forbidden to have pleasure even from a blind person. Now, the reason being is because when he says Roye Chama, he doesn't mean those that see the sun. Rather, as the Mishnah says, Shalei Niskaven Zeh, the intention of this person was El Lamisha Chama Roya Oy Sun. He meant to say that I'm prohibiting myself from having pleasure from those that the sun sees them. So although Roya Chama could mean those who see the sun, which would obviously exclude a blind person and he would be permitted to have pleasure from such a person, that's not what it means. It means those that the sun sees them, which is even the blind person, who the sun shines on him, and therefore he's prohibited to have pleasure even from such a person. So the Gemara asks, my time, what's the reason? How do you see that his words, Roya Chama, mean those who the sun sees them and not those who see the sun? So on that, the Gemara answers, because Medeloi Ka'ama Min Harayim. From the fact that the one who's making the neder didn't say, from those who see, and stop. It could have just said, from those who see. And the reason being is because whoever sees also sees the sun. What do you gain by saying Roya Chama, that you see the sun? Just saying, those who see. Obviously, you see the sun, you see many other things. And the person didn't say that. So obviously, from the fact that the person who made the neder mentioned the word the sun, he doesn't mean those who see the sun, because you don't gain anything by saying that. He means those that the sun sees them. And what is that coming to teach us? That's coming to teach us, lafuke dagim v'ubrim. So what does he mean to say? The sun sees everything. It doesn't. He's excluding fish and a fetus, where the fetus is blocked by the mother's womb, and the fish are blocked by the water, which is, we know, the dark, deep seas, that the sun doesn't get there. And therefore, when he's saying he's becoming usher as a nether from those that are Roya Chama, he means to exclude that he's not going to be forbidden from fish and from having a gnaw from a fetus. Similarly, the next Mishnah continues, Hanoidir Mishchayri Haresh. Someone says, I'm forbidden as a nether from having pleasure from those who have black on their head, meaning they're dark-haired. So, on that, the Mishnah says he's still going to be asa bikrachen. He's going to be forbidden to have pleasure from a bald person, which the chiddush in that is although a bald person obviously doesn't have a hair, and we're talking about that he's forbidden a pleasure from the black-haired person. So he's actually still going to be forbidden from a bald person. Ubali sevis, and he will still be forbidden to have pleasure from an older person, where although his hair is not black, it's actually white. He's still going to be forbidden to have hana from those people. But umutru benoshim ubikatanim, he will actually be permitted to have pleasure from women and children, even if they have black hair. And the reason being is because she'ena kroin shcheri hirosh, that term that he's making himself a neder of being forbidden to have pleasure from those who are blackheaded, is only a reference el anoshim. It's only a reference for men. As Gemara will illustrate that, how we know that it means that, and therefore from all men, whether he's bald or white haired, doesn't make a difference. He's forbidden. But women and children, even if they are black-haired, he'll actually be permitted. So the Gemara asks, my time, what's the reason for this, as the Mishnah explained? So now the Gemara answers, Medeloi ka'amar mibalei seir. From the fact that the one making the neder did not say it, I'm forbidden from those who have hair, so obviously those who are bald are included, because he's not saying that it should be from those who have hair. Now, once the term shcheri hirosh is not necessarily in regards to having hair or not, meaning that people that are bald, as we said, since he didn't mention hair, are going to also be included in the nether. So therefore, the same thing applies for those that are elderly too. That obviously the fact that black is also not dafka, and the white-haired people will also be included in the nether. Now, it's for that reason that the person said shchevi harish, those who are black on their head, meaning he's saying a reference for, because it's obviously lav dafka, because how do we know it's lav dafka? It's not necessarily, because we're including even those that are white-haired. And how do we know we're including those who are white-haired? Because we see that even a bald person is included. And therefore we see it's lav dafka black-haired, because bald doesn't have any hair and still included. And how do we know a bald person is included? From the fact that having hair wasn't mentioned as a requisite. So obviously hair is not important. So bald's included. So bald's included. So white hair is included. So if white is included, so what does the person mean to say when he's saying the nether is on those who are black-haired? Must be a reference to men. Now, the reason for this is that actually the Mishnah continued and said that because umutr b'noshim u'ketanim, it's actually permitted, and it's not forbidden the nether on women and on children. She'en nikroin shcheri harish al noshim, as the Mishnah said, because who's called black-haired? It's a reference to men, which the Gemara says, my tema, what's the reason for this? We obviously understand that shcheri harish is lav davka, it's not necessarily black-haired. It can include bald and white-haired, but why is it necessarily a term for men and not for women and children? So the Gemara answers, because anoshim, men, zimnin de michtu rishav, sometimes their head is covered. But zimnin de megala rishav, sometimes their head is uncovered. Not always is a person having a head covering. Now therefore, there's no other term to define men. If you want to define it based on their head, you can't call them those who have their head covered, because it's not always covered. And neither can you call those who have it uncovered, because sometimes it is covered. So therefore, the only term you're going to give them are shcheri harosh, that have black hair. Why? Because the majority of men have dark hair. Now, avol nashim lo'olam michtu, but by women, that's not the term you would call them. Their hair is always covered, because women have to cover their hair. So if you were referencing to women, you would call them mechusei harosh, if you were basing it based on the top of their head. If you meant women, you would have said those who have their hair covered are making a nether. Now, v'ketanim lo'olam miglu. And children, their head is always uncovered. Both women, because the girls, and both children wear that, maybe not even wearing a yarmulke yet. And therefore, if you were referencing the children, you would have called them meguli harosh. So who do you mean when you say shcheri harosh, since you can't call them mechusim or meguli, because sometimes the man's head is uncovered and sometimes it's covered. So therefore, you couldn't call it either one of those. And the only term you would give, if you want a reference in an interesting way, but you want a reference regarding the head, you would say shcheri harosh, because that's how most men have the color here, and therefore, as our Mishnah said, he's only going to be usher in men, but permitted in women and children. A similar Mishnah, the Gemara continues, Hanoidur min hayiloidim. If someone says I'm forbidden based on a nether from having hana from those that were already born, as the Mefarish brings a pasuk in Yeshua Parakeh, it says hayiloidim b'midbar, means those that were born in the desert. So if someone says, I'm taking a neder from, prohibited from yiloidim, again, which sounds like from those which were born already, so mutter b'noilodim, so he will be permitted from those that are going to be born, that weren't born yet, because he's only making himself forbidden from those that were born already. But, min ha-noilodim, even if he says the term that I want to make myself forbidden from those, which we said before sounds like it's going on in the future, those that will be born, actually the Tanakhama says, asa min ha-yiloidim, he's also going to be forbidden from those that were already born already. Whereas Reb Meir, he's matur af b'yiloidim. He actually permits even from those that were born already, which the Gemara is going to ask, the word af yiloidim sounds like that for sure is forbidden from neilodim, from those that are going to be born. So the question is, so who is he prohibiting when you say either yiloidim or neilodim? What is it that Reb Meir would say is forbidden? If when he's saying af yiloidim, sounds like that for sure noiladim is going to be permitted. Now, whichever case it is, whether it's on yiloidim or noiladim, so what is it that person's prohibiting then with his words if he's saying both niloidim and yiloidim are going to be permitted? So the Gemara will address that question. Now, the Chacham, however, the Chacham argue, and they say that no, both are going to be aser. And the reason being is because lo niskaven ze ela b'misha darkei lehivale. And this, as the Gemara will explain, Chacham Maimrim is really the same opinion as the Tanakhama. It's not another opinion. And it's just that they're saying that actually, when you say min ha'niladim, it doesn't mean just from those that are going to be born. It's also prohibiting those that were already born. So what does the term come to say? It just means to say those that are born, which the Gemara will explain what is that excluding. Obviously, everyone was one time born or going to be born, and you're saying both are included. So what does that term mean to say? What's it coming to exclude? Just, it means everybody. And then the Gemara will explain, though, that there are those that are excluded from that term of that was born or that will be born. Now, the Gemara first addresses the question that we just alluded to, that Lira Meir, he said, Af b'yiloidim, that not only are you sounding like from his words, that you'll even be permitted in those that were born already, sounds like v'loy m'boyu neiladim, that for sure it's going to be permitted from those that are going to be born. So eliman aser. So then, from who exactly is it prohibited if you're saying he's permitted neiladim and yiloidim? So what is his neder that's coming to aser from, prohibiting from, if it means everybody? So that the Gemara answers chesur mechzur b'chitan. Now there are words missing from our Mishnah. This is what Rami was saying. The Tanna Kama says hanoider min hayiloidim. Mutter ben neiladim, as the Mishnah opened up, that those that take a neder from those that were born already, it's only from those that were born already, but will be permitted from those that are going to be born. But the Tanna Kama said, min hanuladim aser b'yuloidim, that even though you're taking a neder from those that are going to be born, you can be aser even from those that were born already. And the reason being is because the Rabban hold that although in the halacha, the reisha, when he's making himself forbidden from yuloidim, from those that were born already, and we say over there that the noiladim, those that are going to be born, are not included. However, that's only when you use the word yiloidim, which is a distinct terminology. And if you're using that terminology indicates only those that were born already. But the Chachamim, the Tanna Kama hold, the term noiladim actually includes both of them. It includes both those that were born and those that will be born. And therefore they hold that when you say noiladim, you're actually going to be aser, not only from those that are going to be born, but even those that were born. But Remeo, I mean, this is how we're explaining. He says the word af hanoider min hanoiladim mutter b'yiloidim. He says that, meaning the oso, is not on the word yiloidim. The oso is going on this case of noiladim. Meaning that also one who says that I'm forbidden from those that are going to be born, will be permitted from those that were born already, and the af is going on ki hechi, just like the noidim in hayiloidim mutter b'neiladim, meaning just like you, the Tanna Kama, you, the Chacham, hold that when a person makes himself forbidden from those that were born, he's permitted in those that are going to be born. So the af may be saying, so too I hold in argument with you, that same thing is when you're making a neder from hayiloidim, that it's also going to be mutter b'yiloidim. In other words, the terms are mutually exclusive, not like you're saying that both are included. Because just like you said, and that's what af, just like you said, from yiloidim excludes noiladim, so do I hold noiladim excludes yiloidim, not like you who hold noiladim includes yiloidim also. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, Amalei Rapabal Abaya, lememra, is this to say, like Remeir is saying, de noiladim de misyaldim mashma? That the term noiladim is only going on those that will be born, and that's why Remeir holds that noiladim is only usher in those that are going to be born, but those that were born already are not included in noiladim, and they'll be permitted. But almayata, but there's a pasuk in Bereishis that says that Yaakov says to Yosef, "Shnei banecha hanoiladim l'cha be'eretz Mitzrayim," that regards to the two sons that were noiled to you in the land of Egypt. So hachinami, according to Remeir's interpretation, it's disyaldenu. It means those that will be born to you. But it's not, because the context of that pasuk is referencing to Menashe and Ephraim, they were already born. So you see that the term neilodim means past tense. So ve'elamai, delay leidu mashma. So what are you going to say based on that pasuk? That, so what, neilodim means past tense, those that were born? But elmiyata, but I have a different pasuk that says the other way around. Looks like it says a pasuk melachem aleph. It says, hini ben neilod lebeis David. Behold, a son is neilod to the house of David. Yeshio Shemai. His name is Yeshio. Now, this was a Nevu in the days of Yeravim, who was the first of the Malchi Yisrael. It was split into Malchi Yehuda and Malchi Yisrael. That's when this prophecy was said. So, Hachinami Dahava, here also the term Noilad, you're telling me from the other pasuk in Bereishis, means past tense, already was born? How can you say that? How can Yeshio have been born, but Vadain Menashe Leba? His grandfather Menashe wasn't even born yet. So how could you say that it was born? So we have a contradiction in the Pesukim himself. So forget about being a question on your mayor that seemingly says Neilada means future. So you said a pasuk that says it's in the past tense, but then I have another pasuk in Malach HaMalach that says it's for the future tense. So Ella, rather, the Gemara concludes, and this explains both Reb Meir and Rabbanan, Mashma Hachi or Mashma Hachi. You're right. Neiladim means, it can mean both going to be born and those that were born already. But Reb Nedarim Halach Achar Lashem Neiladim. This is a Talmudic precept regarding the halachas of Nedarim, that when a person makes a vow, we don't go based on biblical definition of the word. We go on colloquial, we go on the basic human usage of that word, what that means. And as the Ran explained, so that is exactly what Rami and Rabbanan argue in this case of Neiladim. The Rabbanan hold, just like in biblical literature, Neiladim means both those that were born already and those that will be born, as we just brought from two different Pesukim. So actually, they hold that that's actually the common usage in what people use also. So that's why the Rabbanan in the Mishnah went back after they first said that, who they're the same as the Tanakama, that they say when the person says Neiladim, it's and this is not a third opinion in the Mishnah, it's not a different Chacham, they're coming to explain the original opinion. When you're Neidim min HaNeiladim, you're going to be Asr both not in Neiladim, but even by Yeloidim, those that were born already. And that at the end of the Mishnah, they're coming to explain the reasoning. That is, this person did not have in mind only to make himself forbidden from those that are going to be born. Because rather, the reference of this word means both future and past tense. And therefore, it's not necessarily either one. So therefore, it's including both. But Remeya holds that actually the common usage of people, when they use the word Neiladim, actually only means for the future. And that's why Remeya says that Af, just like you say that Yiloidim, means only from those that were born already. And therefore, you'll be permitted in those that will be born. So to Remeya holds that when Lashem and Neiladim is, when they say Neiladim, it means only from those that are going to be born, not like the Chacham who hold it, it actually means both in the common usage. And therefore, he holds that you will be permitted in those that were born already. Now, however, regarding the case of Yiloidim, there Reb Meir and Rabbanan both agree that it will be only for those that were born and it will be permitted from those that will be born. The reason being is because there they both agree that the Lashem and the Adam is actually only a reference for those that were born already. Because as the Ran explains, because actually in biblical terminology, just like the word Neiladim means both future and past, actually the word Yiloidim also means future and past. As he brings a pasuk, which is the pasuk we quoted before from Yahushua, that Kol ha'am ha'yiloidim b'midbar, it means the past tense. Actually, the word Yiloidim also in biblical terminology also means those that will be born. As the pasuk in Shema says, Kol ha'ben ha'yiloid, any boy that will be born, ha'yor tashlichu, you'll throw him into the river. And therefore we see that it means both. So therefore, that's not the reasoning of actually why the Rabbanan even hold that, and the Remeya agrees that Yiloidim means only those that were born and not those that will be born because of the Pasuk, because the Pasuk actually uses them both, just like by Neiladim. But the main criterion is actually the Lashem and the Adam, and regarding Yiloidim, they both agree. But regarding Neiladim is what they argue about, regarding what is the Lashem and the Adam, does it mean only those that will be born or even those that were born already? Now, the Vachacham Aymrim, the Mishnah concluded that the Chacham said in their argument with Remeya that they hold that Neiladim means both those that will be born and those that weren't born. So if you're saying that term, so if that includes everybody, so what's the point of saying that if it means everybody? What are you excluding? So that's what they said. The person who's making the neder, his whole intention was only that I want to be forbidden from those that it's normal for them to be born. So the Gemara Lafu came out, what's that coming to exclude? Everybody's born. And no matter human, animal. So now the Gemara answers, no. Lafuke dug in b'yifus. Person who was making the neder, he was precise in his wording. He wants to be forbidden in anything that's neiladim, which according to Chacham, that's not like our merits, even from those that are going to be born and those that were born already. But what he's excluding from his neder is fish and birds, where they don't give birth, which means to say that the child is born, I mean, he's created and formed inside and comes out whole. Rather, they lay eggs, and it's not formed in the mother's womb, unlike humans and animals, and therefore when that egg is hatched, that actually will be permitted to the person making the neder, because it's only darkei lehivol, those that are born, but not those that are created through a different process, that specifically of being laid in eggs and then hatching.